One thing I would note is that the Vollenberg family, Marcus and Jacob Vollenberg, were head of the SKF. That was a giant ball bearing conglomerate, giant ball bearing manufacturer, which supplied ball bearings to all sides, had a complete monopoly on ball bearing manufacture during the Second World War. They supplied them to all of the major combatants. Their commercial bank was the Enschilde Bank, although they were, shall we say, non-ideological in their business dealings, they were ardently pro-fascist, and there are substantive indications that the American representative for the Bright Company, one of their American firms, a fellow named William Batt, was the vehicle for betraying information about the U.S. Army Air Force raids on the enormous Schweinfurt ball-bearing facility at Regensburg in Germany. SKF owned that, and the American commander of that raid and the American raiders were badly mauled by the Luftwaffe, said that the only way that that could have happened was if somebody had deliberately leaked the American plans. In the book Trading with the Enemy, Charles Higham makes a very good case that, in fact, William Batt of the Bright Company was the vehicle for betraying the plans for the American raid on the Schweinfurt plant at Regensburg. And again, the American Army Air Force was badly mauled in those raids. Continuing here, again, the Wallenbergs are politely referred to here as ambivalent. Like the ambivalent Wallenbergs, Magneto King Robert Bosch, whose nephew was a principal inside the IG Farben leadership, covered quickly once prospects darkened. Quote, I had official information then, Dulles would divulge to a correspondent, which I subsequently confirmed that the Robert Bosch Company was used by Goedler, that's Karl Goedler, one of the plotters against Hitler, was used by Goedler, G-O-E-R-D-E-L-E-R, as a cover for many of his activities in connection with the organization of the German plots against Hitler, unquote. On official Reich passes, one heir to the vast Good Hope industrial empire, Alfred Haniel, H-A-N-I-E-L, importuned Dulles in Bern repeatedly. Dulles' work at J. Henry Schroeder was appreciated, as was his closeness to Thomas McKittrick, M-C-K-I-T-T-R-I-C-K, Long Island's legal client, currently president of the Bank of International Settlements. That, by the way, was in Switzerland. The BIS was originally a creature of German interests, which Hjalmar Schacht had set up to offload reparations responsibilities, and through the war years, an invaluable clearinghouse for Third Reich prizes across Europe and abroad. Again, Hjalmar Horace Greeley Schacht, who was part of this, again, part and parcel to this transatlantic axis that I've spoken about, he was the first finance minister of the Third Reich. He set up BIS, which to a large extent functioned as a useful vehicle for Third Reich financial and industrial interests. Continuing here with the old boys. Now, again, bear in mind that so far what we've looked at are contacts between the Canaris Group, again, more aligned with the German officers, the industrialists, the German aristocracy, and the Junkers, and Alan Dulles. As we're going to see, these contacts and the plots against Hitler were well known to the SS, to Heinrich Himmler, and as we've seen, one of the main Canaris people was Hans Bernd Cassivius, and he was, at the same time, retained his rank in the SS, and he was a Gestapo lawyer. And we're going to see that these contacts between the Canaris people and Alan Dulles were manipulated by the SS to effect an introduction between Prince Max von Hohenlohe of the SS and Alan Dulles, and these negotiations, as well as the negotiations between the Canaris Group and Alan Dulles, led directly to the Christian West concept. Continuing here, now this is where Burton Hirsch introduces the concept of the Christian West. Both Washington and London continued to discount the, quote, Christian West, unquote, approach Alan warmed to, which emphasized a coup against Hitler, his replacement by a government of nationalists free of the Nazis' hallucinated racism and counterproductive ethnic slaughter, military collaboration with the Anglo-Americans, and the continued holding of the Eastern Front, unquote, as this matter was touched on delicately in Dulles' careful editing of the official treatment of his sojourn in Bern. Again, the Christian West concept defined here. Both Washington and London continued to discount the Christian West approach Alan warmed to, which emphasized a coup against Hitler, His replacement by a government of nationalists, free of the Nazis' hallucinated racism and counterproductive ethnic slaughter, military collaboration with the Anglo-Americans, and the, quote, continued holding of the Eastern Front, unquote, as this matter was touched on delicately in Dulles' careful editing of the official treatment of his sojourn in Bern. Quote, his superiors in Washington, the treatment stressed, advised him that it was unlikely a group of this size and character could exist clandestinely in Germany, unquote. The truth was, the plotters around Goedler, codenamed Breakers by Dulles, and important figures in the Nazi government, and particularly the SS, were edging toward pretty much the same gloomy anticipations. Goedler and his bumblers were permitted their antics precisely because important Nazi functionaries dismissed them as ineffectual, yet speculated that something helpful could yet emerge from their ill-disguised flounderings. Again, this last couple of sentences. The truth was, the plotters around Goedler, codenamed Breakers by Dulles, and important figures in the Nazi government, and particularly the SS, were edging toward pretty much the same gloomy anticipations. Goedler and his bumblers were permitted their antics precisely because important Nazi functionaries dismissed them as ineffectual, yet speculated that something helpful could yet emerge from their ill-disguised flounderings. Historians have regularly traced parallel peace initiatives by Abwehr activists and pessimistic SS officers. Often, there were distinctions emphasized which turned on very limited differences. Hans Gasevius, for example, had retained his rank as a Sonderführer in the SS. When the hesitant Himmler's liberal conduit to the bourgeois resistance, the lawyer Karl Langbein, L-A-N-G-B-E-H-N, began to brew it about the possibility of an early compromise peace throughout the neutral capitals, the sympathizer he usually dug out on his Swiss steps was Giro von Gevernitz. Interrupting here briefly, so Himmler, the person that Himmler used as his representative to the, quote, bourgeois resistance, unquote, his fellow Karl Langbein used as his diplomatic introducer, so to speak, the person that he used to get to Dulles and to some of these same people who were in touch with Dulles was Giro von Gevernitz. Continuing. As early as the spring of 1939, Langbein was visiting London regularly, he told his expatriated ex-law professor Fritz Prangsheim, quote, because he belonged to a strong wing in the Nazi Party which recommended an agreement with England, unquote. That's Prangsheim. Skipping down, that's for Fritz Prangsheim. Langbein's approaches to Gevernitz interested Walter Schellenberg, S-C-H-E-L-L-E-N-B-E-R-G, especially. Within the SS, the SD, the Sicherheitsdienst, looked after more sensitive matters like doctrine and subversion. As the SD's Amt 6 International Affairs Chief, Schellenberg amounted to foreign minister for the SS. He coveted the Abwehr's stagnating apparatus. How long could Canaris last? Schellenberg's bow lips and dark, insinuating glances had already won over the susceptible economics minister, Funk, F-U-N-K. Schellenberg honeycombed Funk's bureaucracy with commercial informers. Continuing here with Burton Hirsch's account. As early as the winter of 1942, Schellenberg hinted to the uneasy Himmler that he now intended to launch discreet soundings. These ranged from Abram Stevens Hewitt in Stockholm to Theodore Mord, M-O-R-D-E, a Reader's Digest correspondent in Ankara. Inevitably, Schellenberg discovered a go-between with lines to Dulles, and early in 1943, a series of discussions ensued. Thus opened the contested exchanges between, quote, Mr. Bull, unquote, Dulles, and Mr. Pauls, P-A-U-L-S, unquote, Prince Max Eugen zu Hohenlohe-Langenburg. Max Hohenlohe had long been an international set acquaintance of Dulles, a bustling, polished socialite from the Sudetenland whose status as a minor royal drew customers for munitions from the Škoda Works, a concession Schellenberg helped him snag. Hohenlohe, already bestowed over vast landed properties in Spain after marrying into the Habsburg family. He was currently hedging his political future by traveling on a Liechtensteinian passport. A Canaris familiar, Prince Hohenlohe, caught Schellenberg's attention early in 1942 by sending the rising SD official his own jaundiced appraisal of prospects in Europe. With the all-seeing SD commander Reinhard Heydrich assassinated at the end of May, possibilities had obviously widened for the opportunistic Schellenberg. Barely 30, scarcely beyond his baby fat, the Amt VI chieftain resembled an SS doll decked out in Death's Head campaign hat and tailored parade uniform. With Schellenberg's cautious sponsorship, Max Hohenlohe trotted out a line of provisional peace proposals, first with the British ambassador, Sir Samuel Hoare, H-O-A-R-E, always a soft touch, and the sympathetic American counselor of embassy, William Walton Butterworth, an intimate of George Kennan since Princeton, with Vatican sympathizers, with Fritz Klein, K-L-E-I-N, a friend of both the Dulles brothers, and, evidently at the recommendation of American negotiators in Lisbon, where Kennan and Colonel Solberg were stationed with Alan Dulles himself toward the middle of February 1943. Solberg is S-O-L-B-O-R-G. So again, Solberg, himself a member of the European royalty, even the Habsburgs, is acting here as a representative, long also an acquaintance of Alan Dulles, deeply involved with the overseeing of various industrial properties under the Third Reich's auspices, such as the Škoda Munitions Works in Czechoslovakia. Max Hohenlohe here is dealing with Alan Dulles as a representative of Walter Schellenberg, head of the SD, and as Burton Hirsch has noted here, for all intents and purposes, the foreign minister of the SS. And now we're going to see what came out of these particular negotiations. This represents the Christian West concept again, and as we shall see, that it was the seed concept for NATO, although it did not happen through a coup against Adolf Hitler. That coup on July 20th was unsuccessful. It did happen after the formal collapse of the Third Reich. And recall that last week we looked at the possibility that the Western Front may have been deliberately opened. Well, it'll be never known for sure, but with the capturing of the Ludendorff Bridge at Remagen under very strained circumstances, it may be that the negotiations being undertaken by the Germans with the OSS under Vatican auspices were successful, and that the front was, in fact, the Western Front thrown open to the Anglo-American armies to permit them to occupy most of Germany. We'll never know about that. But in any event, now we're going to take a look at what the substance was of the negotiations between Max von Hohenlohe, representing Schellenberg and the SS and the SD, and Alan Dulles. Exactly what was agreed upon has become a matter of dispute, largely because the SS summations of the exchanges appear to have passed through Russian hands on their way to the archives, after which the USSR news services waited until 1948 and the upheavals of the Cold War to put them out as dispatches. Nevertheless, much of their thrust is borne out by related RSHA paperwork, private journals, and intelligence files from a variety of sources. The last sentence again. Nevertheless, much of their thrust is borne out by related RSHA paperwork, private journals, and intelligence files from a variety of sources. What seemed most scandalous at the time was Dulles' reported pique with, quote, outdated politicians, emigres, and prejudiced Jews, unquote. The hope in America was that these malcontents could be resettled, perhaps, in, quote, Africa, unquote. Bear in mind, this is Alan Dulles here. As one in close touch with Vatican circles, Dulles maintained he strongly urged the German bishops to, quote, plead Germany's cause, unquote, in America, keeping in mind that it had been the American Catholics who forced the Jewish American papers to stop their baiting of Franco's Spain, unquote. Once again, this isn't Hitler talking, this is Alan Dulles. Regrettably, not nearly the difference between the two one might have hoped. Now, again, we're about to come to the real substance of what it was that Freudian slip, Dulles and von Hohenlohe were putting together here. Hirsch continues, this has the look of crumbs spread upon the water. Pronouncements alternated with rich meals in a Liechtenstein chateau. Hohenlohe, bit by bit, exposed his quasi-official status as a spokesman for SS elements within the German government, who now looked beyond the, quote, wild men, unquote, in control. What casts a longer shadow is the outline of Allen's geopolitical ideas. The peace he has in mind, Dulles indicates, must avoid the excesses of Versailles and permit the expanded German polity to survive, Austria included, and possibly at least a section of Czechoslovakia, while excluding all thought of, quote, victors and vanquished as a factor of order and progress, unquote. Within this decentralized nation, the importance of Prussia must be reduced to ward off for the future, Dulles is quoted directly here, the, quote, inwardly unbalanced, inferiority complex-ridden Prussian militarism, unquote. The resultant, quote, greater Germany, unquote, would backstop the, quote, formation of a cordon sanitaire against Bolshevism and Pan-Slavism through the eastward enlargement of Poland and the preservation of a strong Hungary, unquote. This, quote, federal greater Germany, similar to the United States, with an associated Danube confederation, would be the best guarantee of order and progress in Central and Eastern Europe. So, again, this is not Hitler talking here. That's Alan Dulles proposing that a greater Germany would be the best bulwark against the expansion of Bolshevism. Initially, of course, due to the military outcome of World War II, such a greater Germany was not to take place. But again, one doesn't require a great deal of imagination to see the obvious relationship here between the Christian West concept that was formulated by both these German diplomatic and espionage people, first the Canaris people and then Hohenlohe, representing the SS. And bear in mind that, as we looked at last week in the Nazis Go Underground, the core of the underground Nazi apparatus was indeed to be the SS and Gestapo. That is who Max von Hohenlohe was representing here. It's at the present historical distance, though, as we look back from 1992, it is not hard to see the ultimate realization of such a greater Germany. This past spring, I did an archive show called The Old Germany and the New Nazis, or The New Germany and the Old Nazis, excuse me, and read a paper by Martin Lee, a well-known author in this field. He's writing a book about Germany and the resurgence of Nazism in Germany, and in official pronouncements of the current German government, the former East Germany is referred to as Middle Germany. Well, if the former East Germany is Middle Germany, what would Eastern Germany be? I don't think it requires a great deal of imagination. That here is contained in this particular concept here. The eastward enlargement of Poland, the preservation of a strong Hungary, a Danube confederation, and a section of Czechoslovakia. It's kind of what we're looking at here. I would note also that Slovakia, there is no more Czechoslovakia. Slovakia is now an independent state, as it was under the Nazi puppet Josef Tiso, the Reverend Josef Tiso. We looked at that in Radio Free America number 36, the destabilization of the USSR and Eastern Europe. But again, the Christian West concept did not come about through a coup against Adolf Hitler. There was a coup, it was unsuccessful. But after World War II, the Christian West concept, Anglo-American military collaboration with Germany, a strong Germany as a bulwark in Central Europe against the expansion of Bolshevism, and the incorporation of significant elements of the Third Reich into this, that is the basic seed for NATO. And as we're going to look at over the course of the development of RFA 37, at the core of NATO was the Galen spy organization. That turned out to be a Trojan horse as far as the United States was concerned, an organization which is one of the most misunderstood factors in world history, in my opinion, and I'll go to the mat with anyone on this. It is arguably the most important political and military organization of the second half of the 20th century, perhaps the entire century as a whole. Skipping down now, before we take a musical break, in The Old Boys by Burton Hirsch, more about the Christian West concept. An Abwehr officer, F. Eustace von Einem, E-I-N-E-M, later claimed to have sat in on a carefully prepared meeting at Santander in Spain in the summer of 1943, during which both Menzies and Donovan agreed to Christian Wester terms as recapitulated by Canaris personally. If this exchange occurred, Donovan kept it quiet. Menzies was a British diplomat as well. So the Christian West concept ultimately did give rise directly to NATO. It's not identical, but it did give rise to directly to NATO after the formal conclusion of the hostilities of World War II, and as we will see later, and later this week, and also next week as well, with the Galen organization specifically incorporating large elements of the SS and Gestapo, that was at the center of NATO, and the Christian West turned out to be none too Christian after all. We're going to take a look at an article by Carl Oglesby in Covert Action Information Bulletins, issue number 35, in which he examines the Galen organization and specifically examines it in an historical light that I think is absolutely accurate, although it will certainly prove very controversial. He views the Galen organization as an extension of the Odessa and as a Trojan horse in the United States. We're going to be taking a look at Carl Oglesby's article from Covert Action Information Bulletin, and we're also going to take a look at the role of Gero von Gebernitz in the leading to the formation of the Galen organization. All of that coming up after a musical break in the next installment of Radio Free America number 37, How the United States Lost the Second World War.